people who love them.
Hello, my friends. This is Mickey Desai, your host and producer of The Thing About Cars. I've got a very exciting announcement for you. You may remember that special conversation we had with Warren Jobs. He's the CEO of Sealskin Covers. Well, guess what? We're going to actually give away a Sealskin cover to one lucky listener of The Thing About Cars. At the end of this episode, I'll tell you how to enter to win the Sealskin cover. In the meantime, I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Thing About Cars. Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. We've got a very special episode being recorded today in Strongbox West in Atlanta. Around the table, we have a couple of special guests, but our regular co-conspirators include...
Ben.
And Ronnie.
And our guests are...
John.
And...
Kinder.
What? Okay, so one at a time. I'm very excited about this, but Kinder, tell us what your connection is to the world about cars.
So I was contacted after... I think I met you at the Stunt Hustle.
Correct.
The what?
There was an Atlanta Stunt Hustle where a bunch of different people that are wanting to connect with other stunt coordinators in the industry of Atlanta, they meet and talk and basically just network. And so I met you and...
You being Ronnie, me.
Yeah, Ronnie. And he asked me to come on in. He asked me what my experience was with cars, and I told him that I had done autocross with the BMW Car Club of Atlanta and Autocross Atlanta. I've been doing that for about 4 years now.
Cool.
So, yeah.
How'd you get into it?
Funny story, I first bought a 92 Miata, and I didn't really know how to drive it. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to drive stick at the time. This was about 4 or 5 years ago, and... It had just started to rain, and I took off from a light a little too fast, and I didn't know how to handle the car, and I spun out. I got into a really bad accident. I hit my head against the window. I got a concussion from it. So I was like, you know, I want to learn how to actually handle this car and not just hit a bunch of stuff on the road. So my stepdad, he recommended that I do like a novice course in autocross, and that was with Autocross Atlanta, and that's how I got into it, and that was about 4 years ago.
Wow. So yeah. You turned an accident into an asset.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And I ended up really loving it. So right. I kept up with it.
5 years ago, if you don't mind us asking, how old are you now?
I'm 22, about to be 23.
So this was back when you were 16, 17 that you got into the Miata accident and your stepdad encouraged you to do the autocross.
Yeah. I was 18.
Oh, you're 18. My math is horrible.
18, 19. I was a freshman in college.
Oh, okay. Well, that's still... fantastic age to start at.
Absolutely.
How was your first experience? How did you enjoy the autocross scene and all those things?
Well, it's actually a little intimidating being a girl. You're coming to a big event where it's just a bunch of dudes, maybe like one other girl that's there, and everyone's like knows so much about cars, and I was 18, 19, whatever, and didn't know anything. I bought my car with all the stuff already added on to it, and I basically just had to learn as I went, and yep.
Let's take a step back real quick with all the stuff added to it. What's all the stuff?
It was a 92 Miata,
mm-hmm.
1.6 liter. It had a roll bar or roll cage in it, you know, with the door bars and everything, timing advance, a cat delete. There was no turbo or anything in it, just like stuff to make it sound like it went fast and all that. And it had upgraded suspension and good tires.
Cool.
Okay. So very, very basic fundamentals for racing. Now, would you say that kind of stuff in your experience for, you know, being an amateur racer, do you feel like you needed those things just to get going?
I feel like those were the basic fundamentals, especially if you're wanting to start off doing autocross.
Mm-hmm.
For the Miata doesn't need to go super fast because it already handles pretty well. And autocross isn't about going fast. It's being able to, maneuver around a turn and get to, from point A to point B in the quickest and best way possible.
So you could arguably enter autocross with a stock car.
You could if you wanted to.
Not a stock car, but a bone stock car.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's the driver that makes the difference, not just the car.
Right.
Right.
So has it, given your experiences being a woman in the field, was it kind of intimidating? What were your reactions and what have been the major takeaways from you being a woman in a field that's primarily...
Male-dominated,
yeah.
Well, at first, like I said, it was very intimidating, and it made me almost, like, not want to continue because I wasn't good, and I could see all these other people, they're doing so much better than me. But then after, I think, the first year or two, I just, kept, kept going at it. And eventually I like won second place, which is pretty good for my class and, you know, not many modifications done to my car and all of that. So it's just, I guess, persevering through all of the different stereotypes, saying like a girl can't do this, like I can do it, and actually making it happen.
So socially speaking, because this is always an interesting topic for me, whenever I instruct people or teach people or whatever it may be, it doesn't matter how old you are, it doesn't matter how what gender you are or where you come from, anything along those lines, it always comes from a willingness to learn, and that's how I gauge most of my students. But when it comes to male-dominated fields, I'm very good about keeping blinders on for everyone else, you know. But I imagine that's not as easy when you're a female in a male-dominated field. How do you feel socially that the rest of the community in Atlanta's autocross chapter, at least, how do you feel like they treated you in general?
Well, actually, the wife of the man that runs the entire event, she was very supportive. Like the first time I went out, she was like, wow, it's great, there's another girl on the course. And so there are those people that, you know, are wanting to bring out more and more girls. But sometimes when you're gathering up before you actually start the day, you can see like some people will look at me like, oh, what is she doing here? Or what's this small Asian girl doing here at the track? She thinks she's
really, even know, now.
Yeah, I get a lot of comments about it. Even doing just precision driving on set, mm-hmm. people will say like, oh, you know how to drive a manual. I'm like, yes, that's why I'm here.
Yeah, watch me while I proceed to kick your ass.
I will follow that up to say that one of the most renowned stuntmen that I know, who has a very long stunt career, and has coordinated a number of films and TV shows, cannot drive stick. And even when it comes to driving automatic, he is terrible. So no. If anyone listens to this, it is not, you're a female, do you drive manual? It's literally, you're a human being, do you drive manual? Because you may have ended up in this position by mistake. And both male and female, I've seen on movie sets that don't know how to drive, and yet they claimed how to drive. So if a coordinator or someone along those lines, a veteran asks, do you actually know what you're doing? It's not out of a place of malice for gender or age, anything along those lines. It's, we don't know who's friends with who. And some people end up in a position that they don't belong because they're friends with the person that put them there.
It's still a networking effort.
Yeah, No, for sure. There's still a lot of unfortunate, you know, back scratching and nepotism and all those kinds of things. Where the qualifiers of skill set doesn't kind of fall into place.
John was over here nodding his head vigorously a second ago.
Yeah, there's absolutely what Ronnie said. I think that's the most diplomatic answer I can give.
So Kinder, what advice would you have for someone who wanted to get into autocross today, a woman specifically?
For a woman specifically, if you have an interest in... you've always thought about, like, you see people on TV racing cars and you want to eventually get to that step or something like that, start off with doing autocross. It's very easy to sign up. It's like $50 each time you go.
That's all.
That's all.
Huh.
And you get to learn all different types of tricks. That's where I learned how to do J-turns and 180s and all of that, just from meeting a bunch of people.
I'm going to have to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can bring like a Nissan Maxima and you could have a good time out there.
I've already beaten the hell out of my Mazda. I'll just use it.
Yeah. I actually took my, I have a 2012 GTI right now, and I took that to the track. And even though it's front wheel drive, it's still pretty fun.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
What comes after autocross?
Eventually, I'd like to go to like one of those Rick Siemens school or Bobby Orr driving schools to eventually get into stunt driving, because right now I'm just doing precision. But I was able to get into precision because of my experience with doing autocross.
Hold on. Say that again. I'm sorry.
So I was able to get into doing precision driving right now from my experience with autocross. It was actually, I guess, out of fate. I was working as an extra on some Netflix movie, and I was talking to one of the people there. It was this old guy that was sitting by himself, and I was like, oh, so what are you doing here? You do this often? He's like, no, I'm a driver, but I don't have much to do in my spare time, so I just work as an extra. I was like, oh, that's kind of sad. And then, but he said that he used to be a pilot and would race cars when he was younger, and so that's how he got into doing precision. And I told him my experience, and then he invited me into their group. So cool. I got pretty lucky with that.
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to be in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. So no regrets.
No regrets.
And you're having fun.
Yeah, having fun doing it.
Excellent. In spite of the notion that a lot of guys are still like, what's this woman doing over in this paddock or whatever, right?
Yeah, I just kind of have to brush it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last driving gig I did, a lot of people actually were like, oh, you know, you're they always bring up Asian for some reason. You're the first Asian woman I've seen driving cars on set. I'm like, okay.
So?
Yeah.
It's the South, and they're about 30 years behind most of the other, you know. Sorry, Becca, I didn't mean to make fun of the South again, but it is kind of the situation. So in terms of that, do you think this is kind of a problem I've faced with women, and I can't fault women for it in the motorsports industry? I know you need a thicker skin.
Right.
I feel like this thicker skin sometimes backfires on them. What would you say the sweet spot is? Have you found it? Do you feel like you found it? Or are you working towards it?
I feel like I'm at a good place now. Actually, one of the guys that made that comment that I just said mm-hmm. was the guy that I was talking to about getting into precision driving. But because I had like a good head on my shoulders and had a nice, funny take on it, then, you know, that's so how I was able to get in.
Quick wit kind of got you.
Yeah, you just can't take it too seriously.
Well, I think that there are basically two kinds of people. There are folks who make the joke because it's their means of breaking the ice, and they just, that's the first time they've had to do it. Mm-hmm. And then there's other people who make those comments out of insecurity, and those are the dangerous ones.
Right. I agree with that.
Yeah.
If I had a dollar for every terrorist remark I got when I put a helmet on or a fire suit, it's like, ah, so you're going to set yourself on fire. Well, I'd have a lot more than $1. it's an unfortunate thing. I don't want to say it's understandable, but thicker skin definitely helps. But I think quick mm-hmm. wit is probably your best weapon in situations like that, as to not pick up any other stigmas or stereotypes about yourself.
Yeah, it's like you want to build up thick enough skin to where you can play around with people, but not too much where you're coming across as standoffish.
Right. In regards to racing, and I tell this to people that are wanting to get involved with anything, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've explained that it doesn't take much to get into autocross. You don't need a race track prepped cars. You can run tires that are H-rated, preferably with traction and tread. You don't want bald tires showing cords.
Come on, Ronnie. Yeah. Live dangerously.
Well, I mean, I guess if you were going to do it anywhere, you may as well do it in an autocross where your top speed is like 50, 60 miles an hour on, you know, an average car. But if someone is committed to getting into racing or wanting to be a better driver in general and just experience that thrill, would you agree in saying it doesn't take much to just get started? I mean, it's $50.
Yeah, it doesn't take much at all. Some places are even cheaper than that. They have different autocross clubs across America. And so I've done racing at Amelia Island down in Florida. Where else? I feel like there's somewhere else that I've gone to. But yeah, it's pretty affordable. And if you want to do it, you just have to find the time.
So then basics that people would need, you get your car, whether you want to use the car that you regularly drive or whether you want to get a car dedicated just to racing, it's about $2,000 just to get a crummy car just to start. You're looking at about $150 for a DOT rated helmet, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You need to make sure that the vehicle is not leaking any fluids, and you need to make sure that your seat belts work. That's pretty much tech.
Well, actually, at every autocross event, they do an inspection for you, and you can also rent helmets for like $5 or $10 from them.
Oh, even better.
Dynamite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that wasn't a thing when I did autocross in Cleveland. God, I won't say how many years ago. A lot of years ago. So very easy. And the same thing kind of goes for acting is what I tell people, since we're all film industry, or three of us here are film industry people. For people that are passionate about something, they keep aspiring to film and television and, you know, big contract roles and the such. If you are genuinely someone that's passionate about acting, you should look and investigate into your local community theater, because that is still acting at a very aggressive level. It just doesn't pay or as much, and it doesn't give you as much fame. And I think in the same way, autocross is, it's still racing. It's not driving, you know, a C7 Corvette in an HPDE at, you know, STX class, and you're not on a national competition stage, but you're still racing, right?
It's a good place to hone your chops and get good at what you're doing.
Right. And yeah, at least when I was in the Cleveland chapter, there was an EF Civic. It was a 1991 Civic with a D15 series engine that was just on par with a C5 Z06 Corvette.
What?
And, yeah. And depending on the technicality of the track, the Civic would come out ahead because it was a more technical track and it handled beautifully. And if there was a track with more straights, the C5 would come out on top because it could build up its speed.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But it very much gave you the concept that, you know, driver matters more than car. And, you know, knowing how to walk the track and run the track is very important, too.
Right.
I want to continue this conversation, but we're running out of time and I want to cover a couple other things. We always do a trivia segment within every show. We call it Grand Trivia Auto. So I'm going to ask the question, and then we're going to cover one of those topics that's up on the board, and then we're going to come back and answer the question.
Okay.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right. So the question is, what was the last automaker to offer cassette players in their vehicles?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, everyone was like, the last automaker. Was it Ford? Was it Lexus, Honda, or Chevrolet? A stock cassette player. So hang on to that thought. Don't answer it right away. Okay. Ben wrote something up on the board. At least I think it's Ben's topic. Traffic book?
Yes. It was a book I found in this very room. In fact, it's sitting on the shelf behind where Mickey's sitting because I just returned it. It's a book called Traffic by Tom Vanderbilt, subtitled Why We Drive the Way We Do and What It Says About Us. And I'd heard about this for years. I'd heard him interviewed on the radio. It sounded pretty fascinating, but I kind of forgot about it until somebody left a copy in the room that we usually use here. And this is a book that came out in 2009, I believe, so it's about 10 years old now, but it's largely still pretty relevant.
Really?
Yeah, and what he's done, and he starts on page one with one of those why do they do that kind of things. He opens his first chapter with late or early merging in, you know, situations where you have a lane closure or something.
Right.
And he goes through a lot of different things. There's, I think by the time you get to the footnotes, you're into about, almost 300 pages. There's a reason for that. And
sure.
Every single page contains some interesting little insight or revelation about the human driving process. And when you get to the end of it, this is not a car book.
It's a psychology book.
It is.
Yeah.
Because without humans, without human minds behind the wheel, cars are just hunks of metal and plastic.
Sure.
They are meaningless without the driver. And when you're out there on the road, you're not dealing with other cars, you're dealing with other people. And that's one of the things he mentions is that we kind of forget that because we don't always see our other drivers' faces. And a lot of interesting psychological studies into how people process things on the road that are in here. And I really highly recommend reading it for anybody who's interested in things.
I may
like
have
this.
To do that. I admit it, kind of curious. I mean, obviously, people who know me that I have an interest in psychology anyway, it's what I studied throughout grad school. But, you know, I look other people in the eye on the highway.
Sure.
Specifically because I want them to know that I don't really care about them.
Well, it's funny, too, because if you talk to a lot of motorcyclists, who survive being hit by a car,
yes,
they'll tell you, he looked right at me right before he hit me.
Oh.
And then when you ask that driver, they'll say, I never saw the guy.
Right.
So there are a lot of interesting perceptual gaps out there.
Yep.
But the things this guy covers are just fascinating. And I was a little biased toward it anyway, because around the time I was born, my father was a psychologist working at the Highway Safety Research Institute in Michigan. So I was a little primed to be open to this kind of reading.
Sure.
But if you have any curiosities about, you know, why people do what they do on the road, read this.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely going to have to check it out.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So, trivia question answer. You guys ready? What was the last automaker to offer cassette players in their vehicles? Was it Ford, Lexus, Honda, or Chevrolet?
I am going to guess Lexus.
Lexus? Why?
My theory is that the Lexus caters to a lot of like older clientele. So, you know, with a lot of older clientele, they're going to have a lot of cassettes that they don't want to give up, you know, and how are they going to transfer to CDs and all that stuff. So
John says Lexus. Ronnie?
I'm going to go with Lexus also. And I think it was, I was just shocked that I found, I was working on a 2007 LX470 or something along those lines, and it had a cassette player. And I'm like, wow, this is a, I don't know.
A little unusual. About
it. Yeah.
Kinder.
I was going to guess Chevrolet, but after their explanations, I'm thinking maybe Lexus.
Changing your mind to Lexus? You don't have to follow them. Ronnie's got a really horrible track record.
I always get these wrong.
Okay, yeah. I'll say Chevrolet, but say for Chevrolet? No viable reason.
No, that's okay. Ben?
I'm a little tossed up between Lexus and Honda. Lexus for the same reasons John mentioned, but Honda because they've been a little staid in recent years. Mm-hmm. So that's where I am.
So to our listeners, Becca has been hanging out in the background while we record this episode. Becca, you want to give us the answer?
Up so that everybody can hear me.
Yeah, there you
I'm
go.
Pretty sure it's going to be Ford. Again, I have mentioned this before. Ford hasn't been the first to do anything since they had the assembly line. Mm-hmm. I have had newer Fords that still came with cassette tapes, and it's really fun cutting up sub dash to get rid of that, by the way.
So the correct answer is, you guys ready?
Ready.
Drum roll. the last automaker to offer cassette players in their vehicles. The answer, while the Lexus SC430 came with a standard cassette player until 2010, The very last car to be able to play cassettes was the Ford Crown Vic, which still had an optional player in 2011.
Oh, definitely an old people car.
I'm pretty sure there's still an option for an 8-track. I've heard some rumors about a record player that you can mount in the trunk. So it, you know, it's Ford.
Yeah. So thank you again to everybody around the table for joining us. Kinder, I hope we can do this again sometime.
Of course, yeah.
And this has been The Thing About Cars, recording in Strongbox West in Atlanta. Thank you for listening to us. Please visit our website, thethingaboutcars.com, and tell us what we can do better or what you'd like to hear on the show. We love your questions. We love your input. We love it even more when you check out our Patreon and support our efforts that way, and we hope you will do that. I look forward to joining you next week on another episode of The Thing About Cars. Be safe out there.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Bye, thanks.
All right, so this is how you win the Sealskin cover, courtesy of the Sealskin Covers Company. Go to the Thing About Cars website. That's thethingaboutcars.com. There you should find a link to a blog post entitled, We're Giving Away a Sealskin Cover. There you'll find a link to a form which you can use to enter. It doesn't matter what you drive or where you live. All you have to do is give us a name and a valid email address via that form. And while you're at it, we always appreciate your feedback about the show. One lucky listener will be selected at random to win their very own Sealskin cover, courtesy of Warren Jobs and the Sealskin Covers Company. Thanks, as always, for being a part of the Thing About Cars family. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.